Raven's End, A Tale from the Canadian Rockies by Ben Gadd. Read by the author in Canmore, Alberta, beginning on March the 4th, 2019. This recording is copyright 2019 by Ben Gadd. All rights are reserved. This book is for Sia, my Molly, written in memory of Richard Cole, Mark DeLeo, Eckhard Grassman, Laura Jash, John Kula, John Lachlan, Bugs McKeith, Heidi Schaefer, and all the rest. Part 1, Yamniska. Chapter 1. A raven was falling. Eyes shut, unaware, he fell and fell. "Pull up!" came a voice. "Pull up!" The raven opened his eyes. He tried to spread his wings, but he was falling so fast that they almost ripped away. "Hawk!" cried the bird. He extended only his wingtips, which slowed him a little. He spread his tail, which slowed him more. He spread his wings wider. But here was the ground, close by. He was going to hit. Flump! The raven looked up through the juniper bush that had cushioned his fall. He blinked, opened his bill, and said, "Crock!" "Crock is right!" Another raven, big and black, was striding toward the bush. "I can't believe what I just saw. Are you okay?"
My bill hurts."
The raven struggled out of the juniper.
Looks like you went in head first. How's that left wing?"
The raven stretched out a wing.
No, your other wing."
"Oh, sorry, I'm feeling very confused."
"Bump on the head. Don't worry about it. Just sit tight. I'll hang around."
"Thanks," said the hurt raven.
"My pleasure," said the other. "I don't believe we've met. I'm Zach C.C. from the Raven's End flock. And you?"
My name is...
The raven's bill began to chatter.
Oh no, I can't remember.
There, you're just a bit addled. I would be, too, after a crash like that."
Zach's voice was reassuring.
"Are you from around here?"
The other bird looked about. He was resting on a mountainside. The juniper bush gave off a piney fragrance. Down the slope he could see spruce and aspen trees. He turned his head, noting that his neck hurt, and peered up the slope. With a start, he realized that he was at the base of a cliff. The cliff seemed very high, reaching up and up until the gray rock met the blue sky. A cloud appeared at the edge, moving past the cliff. As he watched, the raven began to feel dizzy. His eyes closed, and he staggered onto his side. Zach rushed over and prodded him with his bill.
"Hey, let's not be passing out, whoever you are."
"I feel awful," said the nameless raven. "Everything is so strange."
He looked desperately to the other bird.
"Do you have any idea what happened to me?"
Not the faintest, said Zach, glancing up. "But what's happening right now is that a coyote is headed over here. If I were you, I'd try to get airborne. Quick."
Sure enough, a beast that looked like a long, lean dog was approaching. Head low and eyes fixed on the ravens, it began to trot, then to run. Zach spread his wings and easily hopped into the air. The coyote leapt after him, but Zach was well out of reach.
"Try again, fur brain," he yelled.
And try it did, turning toward the other bird. The crash-landed raven was hobbling away downhill, trying to take off. The coyote saw its next meal there, an easy catch. It gathered itself for the pounce.
Then it felt something stab the base of its tail. The coyote yelped and twisted around. There was Zack, a few wisps of tawny hair in his bill, headed skyward as fast as possible. And there was the other raven, now climbing slowly away, with frantic, badly coordinated wing beats. Zack swooped over to him. That was close. You're in worse shape than I thought. We've got to get back to the cliff.
Thanks, said the bird, breathless from fear and effort. I think you just saved my life.
Twice, actually. First time was when I told you to pull out of that death dive, remember?
The other raven made a wide, skidding turn, but managed to follow. A gust of wind blowing up the slope caught both birds and lofted them upward. They had only to hold their wings out. The trees dropped away beneath them as the wind carried them higher and higher. Soon they were coasting toward the shadows cast by the cliff. Once there, the birds seemed to disappear, dark on dark. Zack soared beside the vertical rock. He turned his head this way and that, his eyes scanning the corners and ledges for a special spot. When he was almost level with the cliff top, Zack tilted a wing down and slid sideways toward the wall. He drifted over a tiny spruce growing in an alcove, put out his feet, flapped his wings twice, and landed neatly on a branch. The other raven followed, grasping the same branch awkwardly. Tired and sore, too exhausted to speak, he settled onto his perch.
Now, said Zack, I'm going to take my afternoon nap, and so are you.
Both birds fell asleep. Chapter 2. When the raven awoke, he knew his name. There it was, Cullen. Over the dark hills on the eastern horizon, a bright spot of pink was growing where the sun would rise. Cullen extended his wings, stretching the sleep out of them. The soreness was gone. He felt fresh, like the mountain breeze that ruffled his feathers. Evidently, he had slept right through the afternoon and on through the night. Now, about yesterday, about that accident, what had caused it? He thought hard, but nothing came to mind. He couldn't remember anything about the day of the crash, or the days before, or where he had lived, or anything. An uneasy feeling grew within him, creeping toward panic. He raised his wings, feathers trembling, as if to flee. Then the feeling changed. It softened and warmed, gently nudging the fear away. The feeling was telling him not to worry, to stop asking those questions for now. Everything would be fine. Everything would sort itself out. Cullen let his wings relax. Zack was stirring beside him on the branch. He raised his head, making the feathers under his chin fan out in a kind of ragged beard. "Ow!" he said, which Cullen knew meant hello to a raven. "Ow!" said Cullen.
"How are you feeling today?"
"Much better, thanks."
"Oh, that's good to hear."
Zack gave his wings a half flap over his head.
"You slept all afternoon, you know, and right on past roosting time. I wasn't sure you'd ever wake up."
"And you waited here all this time?"
"Yes."
"Thanks for looking after me like this, Zack."
"No problem. Would have done the same for any bird."
"Oh, my name is Cullen."
"Ah, remembered your name. I thought you would.
Now, then, where are you from?"
I still can't remember, but I'm trying not to let it bother me." "The right thing to do. All in good time, eh?"
Zack reached down with his bill to rearrange a feather on his belly.
Care to join me in hunting up some breakfast?"
He leapt off the spruce branch, spread his wings, and soared away.
Cullen followed. Really, it was easy. Just jump outward, fall briefly to build up some speed, then get your wings out. And what a joy as the feathers caught the wind. The wind would hold you up, carry you places, tickle your neck feathers, flip you sideways in a sudden gust. What fun! Cullen felt immediately sorry for any creature that could not fly. The first flash of morning sun shot over the foothills. It caught the birds in flight, a squirt of pure warmth soaked up eagerly by every jet-black feather on their bodies. The heat spread inward, flowing deep and strong, loosening their muscles, transferring its energy to their flesh and bone. The two ravens accepted it gladly and flew on. Zack was bound for the meadows below the cliff. He slatted his wings back and lost elevation quickly. Cullen followed, taking care to keep his speed down. At treetop height, the birds leveled out and began flying slowly along the cliff base. Cullen recognized the site of yesterday's crash. He looked for the coyote, but it was gone. Abruptly, Zack wheeled and landed, attracted to something square and pale lying on the ground. He examined the object closely. Then he tore into his find, gesturing with his bill that Cullen was welcome to have some, too. Cullen touched the square thing with his own bill. He found that it was soft. It smelled wonderful. He picked off a piece, felt it on his tongue, and swallowed it. Oh, yes, it was delicious. "What is this?" he asked.
"Flour," said Zack, bumbling through his food. "Peanut butter and jam. Humans eat them."
He swallowed. The humans walk up this trail to the cliff. They get hungry, so they open their packs and eat these things. They have to stick their food into their mouths with their hands, so they always drop some. Of course, we're lucky to get a whole sandwich. Zack bent down for another bite, and then he saw a bright yellow bag lying nearby.
Hey-ho! Could be potato chips.
He hopped over and stepped on the bag, clamping it to the ground with his outstretched toes. Grabbing a patch of the slippery plastic in his bill, he pulled upward. The bag popped open, showering the birds with chips and orange-colored barbecue flavoring.
All right, my favorite kind!
Zack gobbled down several chips, then looked at Cullen.
But they do make a bird thirsty.
Crunching away at the chips and ripping off pieces of the sandwich, Cullen was lost in pleasure. Such food lying about for the taking. These humans, whatever they were, must exist just for the benefit of ravens. A thumping sound close by interrupted Cullen's thoughts. Zack jumped backward into the air, and Cullen did the same, following Zack to the safety of a tree. Looking down, Cullen saw several large animals walking slowly up the trail together.
"Whew!" said Zack, as he watched them go by. "I'm losing my grip. They got way too close before we heard them."
"What were they?" Cullen asked. Zack's head swiveled toward Cullen. His bill opened and closed in disbelief.
"You don't know?"
Not really. I guess you do, though."
"You bet your bum feathers I do. Humans."
Zack looked in the direction they had gone. He shook his head.
"Are they dangerous?" asked Cullen. "You got that right," said Zack. "Most dangerous things around. You can't trust them at all."
"But they leave this food for us," Cullen began, unable to believe that these slow-moving, ponderous creatures could pose a threat to a raven.
"Yeah, and I've seen them poison it, too."
Zack looked suspiciously in the direction the humans had gone.
"I always take just a small bite first, to make sure it's okay, before I get right into it."
He looked down from his perch to the remains of the sandwich.
"And since this is fine," he continued, "I'm going to take some home for Molly."
He coasted back down to the ground. About half the sandwich was left, and Zack grabbed it in his bill. Rather than doing a vertical takeoff, he was forced to run downhill with it. A few powerful flaps put Zack into the air and straight into an aspen tree. The sandwich fell from his bill, came apart in midair, and both halves landed jam side down in the dirt.
"By the trees, you moldy lump of wormwood," Zack swore. "What the blazes are you doing in my way?"
Cullen alighted beside the sandwich, trying not to laugh. "Let's each carry half," he suggested. "We can still give it all to whoever it was you were going to give it to."
"To Molly," said Zack,
preening a twisted wing feather back into line.
"Who is my nestmate, if you care to know?"
He looked irritably at Cullen.
"You're awfully smart all of a sudden, for a bird who could hardly fly only yesterday, let alone think."
Cullen saw that Zack's pride was suffering, so he said nothing. He picked up one of the slices of bread and wondered whether he could fly with even half of what Zack had been carrying. He could, and soon both birds were heading back the way they had come, back along the cliff toward the east end of the mountain called Yamnuska. Chapter 3. Of all the mountains along the eastern front of the Canadian Rockies, Yamnuska has the longest, straightest, steepest cliff. For this reason, Yamnuska has always been home to ravens, and it was homeward along Yamnuska's great south face that Zack and Cullen flew, carrying the discarded sandwich they had found. Zack passed by the night's roost. He led Cullen farther east along the face. Then he landed on a ledge. There, still sleeping, was another raven. "This," Cullen thought, "must be Molly." Molly pulled her head from under her wing and blinked in the morning sunlight. She joined Zack in a dance. Both birds hopped about on the ledge, raising and lowering their heads. The dance ended with Zack putting a small piece of the sandwich right into Molly's open bill, as if she were a youngster being fed. Molly ate slowly, delicately, to show how much she appreciated the gift. And then she turned toward Cullen. Cullen was about to offer his own part of the sandwich, but Zack interrupted.
"Molly, this is Cullen C.C., he said.
Said Molly.
Said Cullen, choking on the food he still held in his bill.
He dropped it at her feet and turned away.
"Excuse me,"
he said in a small voice. Molly and Zack laughed. They laughed as ravens laugh, a sort of cra-ha-ha, their bills held high, their bodies prancing around in silly little steps.
"Molly, this bird fell right out of the sky over the south face yesterday," Zack explained. "It got a bump on the noggin from it. Kind of mixed him up, you know. But he's really quite nice. Should be okay in a day or two. Do you mind if he stays with us? Just until he's back to normal."
Molly looked Cullen over carefully. "He's certainly polite. At least, he tries to be." She smiled at Zack. "Of course, I don't mind. For a few days." Cullen reached for another bite of breakfast. Suddenly, a dark body flew between the birds and the sun. It seemed to pass over the ledge in a black flash, and Molly's meal was gone.
"Hark! Dulles!"
Zack was on the wing instantly. In 5 beats, he caught up with the thieving raven. They grappled in mid-air, locking feet. Zack pecked Dulles in the breast and raked him with his claws, but Dulles would not give back what he had stolen. He swallowed most of it and spat the rest out. As Zack swooped to chase the falling food, Dulles smirked after him.
"If I can't have it, you can't have it either."
From the ledge, Colin watched all this in horror, but Molly just sighed. "Oh, that's Dolus for you," she said. "No one can stand him. He does stuff like this all the time, and he's big and mean. Look out for him, Colin. He can really hurt a bird."
Zack was plummeting downward in a full wing tuck, hoping to intercept what was left of the sandwich. But the gob of food fragmented as it fell, and Zack snatched up only a few crumbs before he had to give up the chase. By this time, Dolus had flown off. Zack returned to the ledge in a rage.
"By the trees, I'm going to get that bird! First chance, I'm going to get that bird! I just don't know what I'm going to do about that bird!"
Molly smoothed Zack's feathers, clucking sympathetically.
"Never mind, dear. We'll complain at the flap."
Zack regained his composure.
"Molly, I'm so sorry he got your breakfast. I just didn't see him coming."
Molly gave Zack a loving touch with her bill.
"I know, I know. Nobody could have done a thing."
What's the flap?" asked Colin.
They both looked at him dumbly.
"You don't know what the flap is?"
Molly was astonished.
"Where are you from, anyway?"
Zack explained.
"He has no idea. It was that crash landing. Can't remember anything that happened before then. Must be very hard for him."
Molly's eyes looked kind.
"Forgive me, Colin. Imagine forgetting your whole life. Well, come along with us to the flap, and then you'll remember, I'm sure."
She turned to Zack. "It's at Raven's End this morning." The three birds hopped off the ledge and started eastward into the warm morning breeze. The cliff became lower as they followed it, and then it ended abruptly. At its foot, a long, rounded ridge continued eastward toward the prairies. Molly and Zack landed right where the ridge met the cliff. This, Colin decided, must be Raven's End. Other ravens were gathering there, arriving in ones and twos. They were walking about on the bits and pieces of gray limestone that had fallen from the cliff and now lay heaped against its base. Tall pines and spruce trees stood here and there. Brilliant orange lichens encrusted the cliff, and wildflowers bloomed on every ledge. A small gray bird sang from its perch at the top of the tallest spruce, repeating the same musical-sounding one-note call. "Mourn, mourn, mourn." It was a special place, Raven's End. A place like nowhere else in the mountains, and for countless centuries the ravens of Yamnuska had gathered there. They met each morning to discuss the things ravens care about, where to find food, mainly, and to hear the news. Molly, Zack, and Colin joined eight other ravens on the ground, forming a rough circle. They shifted their feet, bobbed their heads, and greeted each other, saying, They turned their big bills this way and that. They spoke in low, serious-sounding croaks and high-pitched giggles. At length, a very large raven swooped down into the middle of the flock. Every bird became quiet. The flap had begun. Chapter 4 Colin stood next to Zack in the circle. He watched as the big raven extended a magnificent set of wonderfully ragged neck feathers and looked each bird briefly in the eye. Colin was impressed. Might this be the leader of the flock?
"Oh,"
said the raven in a deep, rich voice.
"Oh,"
replied the other birds. Colin turned to Zack and asked, very quietly,
"Who is that bird?"
"Our main raven,"
Zack replied in a whisper. I forget his real name. He doesn't use it anyway.
The main raven spoke again. First, he said, we shall have the news. Maya? The flock looked up toward the gray bird atop the spruce. Maya was a Townsend solitaire, with white rings encircling her eyes. She finished her warm-up, a few more of those wistful mourns, and broke into a long, complicated song. She trilled on and on in a high voice, her eyes bright, her daily report spilling out. The other birds knew that Maya loved events and activities, gossip and intrigue. Anything that happened on Yamnuska became known to her. She could understand any bird, no matter how difficult the language, and she could follow the communications of many other creatures, too. The musical talk of the frogs, the grunts, whines, and howls of the mammals, the buzzing high-speed data transmissions of the insects. Maya spent her days collecting information, and every morning she proudly, happily passed it on to the ravens. News addicts themselves, the ravens were one of the few species that could understand her, she talked so fast. Overnight weather was cool. Wood rats report frost on the summit rocks, but winds were light. A pair of snipes in the willow marsh lost a clutch of eggs to a mink last night. First mink seen there this summer. Flowers reaching height of bloom this week include brown-eyed Susan, goldenrod, and fireweed. Last year's spectacular display of arnica is unlikely to be repeated this summer. She stopped, took a breath, then went on. The cougar killed a porcupine in the North Valley yesterday. Her other recent kills here include an elk calf and a bighorn sheep. She apologizes for the number of kills, but cites her unusually large litter of kittens, says they're hungry all the time. Another breath. Moving to the world of avifauna, the brewer's sparrows are worried about the rain we've been having. Some report brood failures from it, but most pairs are still optimistic. The pitch of Maya's voice rose higher and higher. Her eyes widened until it seemed that her eye rings might burst. She was at full speed now, turning this way and that, leading up to the most important item of the day. And this just in from a red-tailed hawk who happened to be cruising the south face yesterday afternoon. A human has been killed there. Fell nearly from the top while climbing. Another human, apparently with it at the time, was uninjured but spent the night on a ledge. Other humans rescued the survivor. They took the body away before anyone could eat it. At this point, Brendan, a young raven, interrupted. Hey, wow! Eating a human? I wonder what they taste like, another young raven wanted to know, leaving Maya to burble away unheeded. Oh, really weird, I bet, said Brendan.
Please, please, the main raven called out. Let us afford Maya the attention she deserves.
By this time, Maya was reaching the end of her report. She finished with the weather forecast, courtesy of the toads, who were very sensitive to changes in barometric pressure and relative humidity. Her commentary trailed off into the same repetitive one-note call she had started with, a rather sad sound reminding her audience of the burden Maya bore. Day in, day out, the news was mostly bad. As usual, no one thanked her for providing it. Soon she nodded off on her perch. Later she would make her rounds.
Now then, said the main raven, the next item is complaints. Does anyone wish to register a complaint?
I do, said Molly. I wish to complain about Dolus.
The ravens groaned. Not Dolus again. Somebody was always complaining about Dolus. There he was, part of the circle, but given plenty of room by the birds on either side, neither of whom wanted to stand too close. Dolus grinned mischievously. Molly refused to look at him. Dolus stole some food from me this morning, and it was a present from Zack.
Well, that's right, said Zack.
Swiped it right off our ledge. Gobbled as much as he could, and then, can you believe this?
He threw the rest away when I caught up with him. The other birds clucked disapprovingly.
Well, Dolus, queried the main raven, have you an explanation for this behavior?
Dolus looked down at his feet. He spoke in a low croak out of the side of his bill.
Molly's making this up. Zack brought her something she didn't like. She pushed it off the ledge. I just caught it and ate it. Liar! Roared Zack. In two hops he was across the circle, bill to bill with Dolus.
Zack sleeked his feathers back, a threatening gesture, and clacked his bill.
Dolus did likewise. Come on, Zacky bird, just try it, he growled.
Infuriated, Zack attacked. His head shot forward, and his bill struck Dolus hard on the breast. Dolus immediately struck back. The two locked feet, pecking and biting each other, flopping about in the rising dust as the circle moved back to give them room.
Stop it! Stop it!
Shouted the main raven. But the fight went on. The other birds became more and more upset, flapping their wings and calling, Grah! Grah! Suddenly, another bird jumped on Zack. This one had been cheering for Dolus. Now it was pulling feathers from Zack's back. Well, that was too much for Molly.
You leave my Zack alone!
She screamed, running up and pecking the other raven on the tail. It sneered at her and hopped away. By now, Dolus had ripped several feathers from Zack's wings, and a spot of blood was showing on Zack's breast. Breathing hard, Zack looked to be in danger of losing the fight. But then Dolus took a stab at Zack's eye, a low blow among ravens, and he missed, giving Zack a chance to get his bill around Dolus's throat. He bore down hard, and the other birds gasped. Zack could kill Dolus this way. Zack was considering doing just that when he, Dolus, and every other bird in the flock suddenly took to the air. Humans were coming, headed right for the circle, and they had a dog. That was the end of the fight. Dolus and his ally flew off by themselves. Zack, Colin, and Molly alighted high in a pine beside the cliff.
Oh, it was on the leash, thank the trees, said Molly, eyeing the dog from the safety of her perch.
The two humans were now sitting right where the ravens had been fighting. The dog was sniffing among the shrubbery, chasing squirrels up the trees, barking at the birds, lifting its leg on the boulders. Zack was a mess. His feathers stuck out all over, and he had nasty bites on his legs. The wound on his breast oozed pink. He sat stiffly, not saying a word. Molly went to work on his feathers, tenderly straightening them and pressing them back into place.
Oh, Zack, my poor, brave Zack. If those humans hadn't come along, I don't know what might have happened. You're not the type to kill anyone. But I wouldn't have minded a bit if you'd hung on to Dolus long enough to do the job.
She raised her eyebrow tufts and looked in the direction Dolus had flown.
Dolus has got to go. And that other bird, what's his name? Garth, that's it. That other bird always takes his side. They've both got to go.
She stamped her foot.
They just arrived here one day, uninvited, and they won't leave.
Zack still sat speechless, his eyes shut against his pain and anger. Molly's bill continued to stroke and soothe him. Colin had kept quiet since the fight started, surprised that such a well-mannered, civil event as the flap could have ended the way it did. From a neighboring spruce, Maya watched and listened. She would really have some news to pass on today. Chapter 5. Zack and Molly excused themselves to go back to their roost. Maya flew off. The other ravens had already left, disgruntled by the outcome of the flap, and not caring to hang around the humans and their dog too closely. Only Colin remained, alone on a dead branch atop the pine. Brilliantly sunny a few hours ago, the day was now going dark. A bank of low clouds had moved in from the east, and scattered drops of rain were making black speckles on the ground. The humans pulled their jackets from their packs. Colin was amazed to note that humans carried extra plumages with them. And they talked excitedly, looking up and pointing. At the first rumble of thunder, they called the dog and headed back the way they had come. Colin had Raven's End to himself. He thought about things. Here was a flock of ravens. He wasn't really a member of the flock, and he wasn't sure he wanted to be. But what else could he do? He'd have to stay with them for a while. He needed their help until he got himself sorted out. Zack and Molly certainly had been kind to him. As for the other birds, well, they seemed decent enough. Except for Dolus. He'd have to stay out of the way of that bird. Lightning hit a neighboring peak. It sent a wave of thunder bumping through the valley, rolling back and forth between the cliffs. Colin looked up. The undersides of the clouds had joined themselves into a solid ceiling as gray as the rock, and now the ceiling was coming down. It touched the top of Yamnuska and crept further down the cliffs. Tendrils of mist caressed the pinnacles and explored the corners. A gust of wind carried the mist over Raven's End, and Colin's perch was suddenly in fog. He could hear the dog barking, now far below, but the fog was so thick that he couldn't see beyond the next tree. The world became very small. Something about this fog made Colin uneasy. It was as if the mist were alive, that it knew he was there. Its cold presence brushed by him, stroking his wings, curling between his toes, throwing tiny flecks of moisture into his eyes. He blinked. And then the mist started to speak to him. There is a mountain with feathers. The voice of the fog was wispy, the sound of vapor moving over stone. It came from everywhere at once, and it kept saying the same thing, over and over. There is a mountain with feathers. Feathers on the mountain. The mountain has feathers. Feathers. On the mountain, there are feathers. This message from the mist, Colin knew, was meant for him. He knew it more surely than he knew anything else, which was comforting, considering how little he understood of the world around him. As the voice went on, he tried to imagine what a mountain with feathers would look like. An image flickered through his mind, but he couldn't see it clearly. He grew sleepy, his eyes closed. As the rain began in earnest, he tucked his head under his wing and dozed off. Chapter 6. While Colin slept, the weather ran its course. The sun had worked very hard in the morning to generate the storm, heating the air masses and pushing them this way and that, until they had crashed into one another and spilled out their rain and lightning. But now, late in the afternoon, the sun was bored with the whole business. It shone lazily near the horizon, letting the clouds drift away. Colin awoke. He shook the droplets from his feathers. Where was he? Yes, he was at Raven's End on Yamnuska. Things were becoming more familiar now. His memory, at least for recent events, was improving. He recalled the fog, The fog memory recalled the dream memory, and then the message in the dream. "What a crazy idea," Colin said aloud to himself. "Mountains with feathers? I'm still not right from that crash."
"Eek,"
came a sound from below. Colin looked down.
"Eek,"
came the sound again, exactly as before. It was raspy, as if some animal were making it through its nose. Then Colin spotted the source. A small gray creature was crouching on a boulder. The boulder was gray, and the animal was exactly the same color, so it blended in perfectly, as long as it didn't move. And it wasn't moving. A few moments went by as the animal stared at Colin, and Colin, turning his head from side to side, looked at the animal. It was fat. There was no tail. Its round ears were edged with a thin line of white fur. Its eyes, as motionless as the rest of it, were black. Colin was beginning to have designs on this creature, whatever it was. It looked like the sort of animal a raven could eat, and Colin was hungry.
Eek!
Colin now realized that the animal wasn't shrieking eek from fear or surprise. It was saying eek. This must be its normal voice. So it wasn't really afraid of him. Maybe it was trying to tell him something. He decided to speak to it. He said.
Eek,
said the animal. This conversation was going nowhere, he thought. Maybe he should just hop down there and have the thing for supper. But he delayed. He wanted to know what kind of animal this was, even more than he wanted to eat it. He spoke to it again. Hello there. I was just wondering what kind of animal you are.
I'm a pika, the creature said plainly. The way it said pika sounded a lot like eek.
Oh, a pika, of course, Colin replied, as if he had known all along.
We live among boulders, the pika went on, and we are not rodents. Please do not confuse us with rodents. Rather, we are lagomorphs, like our relatives, the hares.
The pika recited these facts without emotion.
Oh, I wouldn't confuse you with a rodent, Colin assured the pika, wondering what a rodent was.
Yes, you would. Everyone does.
Colin decided to change the subject.
I'm feeling a little hungry, he said socially. How about you?
The animal ran down from the rock and disappeared underneath it. The next eek had a tinge of alarm.
Now, that was stupid, Colin thought. He'd scared it off.
Oh, well, that was that. He jumped off his perch and glided down to the ground, where, he recalled, the humans had been having a snack earlier in the day. Sure enough, there were goodies lying around. In the hiker's haste to escape the storm, they had left behind a plastic bag with several cookies in it. Colin grabbed the bag in his bill and picked it up, spilling a cookie onto the ground. He regarded his find, lying there with its chocolate chips staring up at him. Now, what had Zack said about human food? Oh, yes, taste first before eating. It might be poisoned. He nibbled a corner. Sweet, dry. He picked at a bit of chocolate.
Wow, no wonder humans ate this.
Colin planted his bill in the center of the cookie, breaking it up, and then he wolfed down the pieces. He ate another cookie, and a third, and a fourth.
Eek!
The pika had crept up on its boulder again. Here it was, only a wingspan away, watching him.
What's your name?
Colin asked, feeling friendlier toward the woolly little rock rabbit sitting across from him. He was no longer interested in making a meal of the pika. The cookies had taken care of that, and the pika knew it.
"My name is Okatona," said the pika. It spoke without expression. "All pikas are named Okatona," it added.
"What?"
Colin couldn't believe what he had just heard.
"You all have the same name?"
"Yes," replied Okatona. "But we all have different names, too."
"Now wait," said Colin. "If you all have the same name, how can you have different names?"
"Oh, it's easy. We change them every day. Today we're calling ourselves Edward."
Colin began to giggle.
"And tomorrow?" "Well, for tomorrow we were thinking of using Maxine."
This was too much. Colin threw his head back, opening his bill.
"Craw-ha-ha!" he called, dancing about on the rock, wings shaking with laughter. "Craw-ha-ha! Edward, is it? Maxine? And what were you all yesterday? Craw-ha-ha-ha!"
"Emily." The pika didn't laugh.
"Craw-ha!"
Colin's wings rustled down onto his back. He looked away from the pika, trying to understand. He couldn't, so he looked back.
"Why is it that you pikas don't keep the same names? I mean, aside from the one you all have."
"It's because we're all so much alike. Besides, we don't last long enough to make it worthwhile having separate names."
Colin was shaken. You mean you don't live very long?"
"That's right," said Okatona. "Myself, I'm doing pretty well. Almost a year now, but not much longer, probably."
"How do you know that?"
"Well, the weasels got an Emily last night, and a hawk picked off a herald the day before. I might be next."
"How terrible for you to live with that kind of danger."
"Oh, it's okay," said the pika. "That's the way of the world. We've got lots of little ones coming along. My mate had a pretty good litter this spring, and she denned with another female. When one of them gets it, the other will look after all the youngsters. Of course, there will be fewer to look after as the days go by. So everything works out, you know."
Colin mulled this over. What a fatalistic existence! Did these pikas just let themselves be eaten? Didn't they even make an effort at self-preservation?
Of course they did, he reminded himself, recalling how Okatona or Edward or whoever it was had run away when he had blurted out his intentions. Still, this animal seemed awfully easygoing about matters of life and death.
"Have you ever wondered what happens after you die?" he asked.
The pika didn't reply right away. It thought for a minute, and then it said, "I have, just now."
"Well?"
"After I die, let's see. After I die, then I'm dead. But lots of other pikas are still living. Pikaness goes on."
"Pikaness?"
"Yes, the essential thing about being a pika, pikaness."
"But you, personally, are dead."
"Personally dead, yes, I suppose. But then there are all the others, and we're really all the same, so..."
Colin couldn't help interrupting. "What do you mean you're all the same? You can't all be the same."
"Of course we are," said the pika. "Just look at us. Same size, same shape, same color, same habits, too. Pikaness."
"So it's this pikaness that matters most to you? More than your own personal life?"
"Certainly. When one of us dies, pikaness goes on. Isn't it the same with ravens?"
"Well, no," Colin replied, feeling strangely selfish.
He would need to consider this further. He tried to grasp the implications clearly.
Now, if all Pikas thought of themselves as the same Pika, then any particular Pika would... Before he could complete the thought, his eye caught the shape of a shadow moving over the ground toward them. Small and black, the shadow stopped. Okatona cried, "Eek!" quite loudly and scuttled away toward the edge of the boulder. But the shadow grew suddenly bigger. There was a whistling sound, and the Pika was gone, wriggling in the talons of a large brown and white bird. The bird skimmed away at high speed as it turned the motion of its vertical dive into a long horizontal glide out over the trees. Colin heard its voice. "Falcon mate, this is CZE. Stoop complete. Have taken on fuel. Am now over Raven's End on heading 019er, returning to base." Chapter 7. As the brown and white bird departed, a black one arrived. Colin flapped off the boulder, out of harm's way, but the bird turned out to be Zack.
"Well, that was amazing, Colin. Pretty close encounter for you, eh? Imagine having a prairie falcon grab its dinner right from under your bill."
"Is that what it was, a prairie falcon?"
"Yes. Lives across the valley. Very fast bird. Fortunately, it doesn't kill ravens, although you never know with hawks and falcons. I try not to make too inviting a target. Not that you can see a falcon coming, it's so fast. Flies high, sees something, drops like a rock falling off the south face."
"Zack," said Colin, "what do you know about Pikas?"
Not much," Zack replied. "Never talked to one. Cute little guys, though. No trouble to anyone. Hey, Molly, did you see the falcon?"
Molly landed beside him.
"No. They're gone before you know it. But I did see one earlier, cruising over the summit, and it could have been the same bird. The one from over on Bilbo?"
"That's the one. The main raven told me they confabbed once. Something about hitting a raven by mistake."
"Let's hope he never makes a mistake with us," said Molly, shivering. "What a way to die. Knocked out of the air, then those talons crunching into your belly. Oh, ugh." She shivered again.
"He got a pika," said Colin. "Poor thing. That pika will be nothing but a scrap of fur by morning, and a bony pellet dumped under the roost."
Not that I'd venture anywhere near a falcon's roost," said Zack, "especially while it's eating. I hear they don't take kindly to that."
"Well, you stole a half a deer mouse from a red-tailed hawk once," Molly reminded him, proud of her mate, "and you got away with it."
"Ah, those red tails, especially that pair nesting at the west end. They're nothing but a bunch of puddle ducks. I've seen them on the ground, eating worms."
Colin laughed. He pictured a large, fierce-looking hawk hopping around pulling up worms like a robin. Then he became serious again. "What kinds of things do attack ravens?" he asked. "Besides coyotes."
"This bird still isn't in his right mind," Molly whispered to Zack. "How could he even ask that?"
Zack whispered back,
"Considering everything, I think he's functioning pretty well."
"Considering what?"
Colin said loudly. Zack looked down at his feet and replied,
"Oh, considering that you're still alive."
"You've got to smarten up, Colin," Molly said. "That falcon incident was scary. It might just as easily have been an eagle." So, eagles hunt ravens. Colin could now count at least two raven predators. What else? He knew that this was another dumb question, but how is he going to survive if he didn't know what to watch out for? Molly decided to humor him. She ran through the list. Foxes,
coyotes, wolves, martens, fishers, lynx, bobcats, cougars, goshawks. Oh, now there's a frightening bird. And golden eagles, of course. As Molly spoke, Colin was surprised to discover that he could picture each one of these raven killers. The tawny coyote with its bushy tail. The fox, like a small coyote, but redder, with a white tip on its tail. The wolf, bigger than a coyote. The marten, a pointy-eared weasel, but not as big as the fisher, which was another kind of weasel. The lynx, a big cat with a short tail and tufted ears. The bobcat, similar but lighter colored and faintly spotted. The cougar, biggest of the cats. The goshawk, a powerful gray bird with red eyes. The golden eagle, enormous and brown. So many enemies. But ravens were lucky, he realized. What if he were a pika? The list for pikas must be even longer. What did I leave out, Zack? Molly asked.
Humans, he said.
Oh, yes, humans, the worst of all. Why the worst? Colin queried.
Might as well learn as much as he could, while Zack and Molly were willing to explain.
They kill everything, Zack stated. Doesn't matter what it is, they kill it. They even kill trees.
No. Colin was genuinely shocked. Deep in every raven was an abiding love for trees.
Yep. Cut through 'em at the base of the trunk and take 'em away.
Where? Molly answered. Who knows? And I don't want to know either. Imagine cutting down trees. She closed her eyes and shook her bill back and forth.
You know what's really awful, Zack continued. Humans kill without eating, just for fun. I've seen them do it. Remember that raven last year, Molly?
Indeed I do. Her tufts rose in anger as she remembered. It was Dolores, visiting from Kananaskis. Very enjoyable bird. I spent a morning with her. A human killed her with a stone, not two hops from where we're sitting right now. Just left her lying there. You can imagine how her nestmate took it. Colin was nonplussed. But why do they do it, all this killing? Naturally mean, just naturally mean, Molly clacked her bill. I wish they'd all go back to wherever it is they come from. There are more of them every year.
Although, Zack was looking sly. You have to admit that we benefit by them, Molly.
She rolled her eyes up and looked away. Zack turned toward Colin.
Humans provide us with a lot of food. What they leave, we get. They'll kill a sheep, say. Cut off the head and leave the rest to rot. Well, guess who's there the minute they walk away? Pretty good eating, bighorns, especially after a few days in the sun.
He opened his bill and ran his tongue along the edges.
Been a long time since I've had sheep guts, he said, savoring the memory. Maybe this fall when the humans are hunting.
But we always wait until the hunters are long gone before we move in, Molly cautioned. They can kill you from a long way off. They just point at you with a stick. Bang, you're dead.
How can they do that? Asked Colin. Don't know, said Zack. But I can tell you this. Expect the unexpected around humans.
Then he looked up.
Hey, it's the evening flight. Up, up and away.
Overhead, Colin could see the whole flock of ravens soaring on the updraft high above the summit of Yamnuska. 10 spots of black against the sky, they were circling, doing shallow climbs and dives, playing in the wind. Colin could faintly hear them calling to one another up there. He understood immediately, for a change, that this was the evening equivalent of the morning get-together. In the evening, the ravens did their socializing in the air, not on the ground. Molly and Zack departed noisily for the flight, croaking loudly and flapping hard to catch up. Colin hesitated a moment, wondering if he were welcome to join in. Then Zack looked back and called to him,
"Come on, Colin, get a wing on it, CC, or you'll be left behind."
He'd have to ask Zack about this CC business, Colin thought, as he leapt into the updraft. What did CC mean, anyway? But he soon let the thought go. The sheer rapture of flight drove everything else from his mind. He could feel the breeze tugging him skyward. Chapter 8. The late summer sun was just setting behind the Canadian Rockies. It slid down at a shallow angle, coasting northward as it sank, skimming the tops of the peaks, winking out behind a summit and reappearing on the other side, dropping lower and lower. The last golden rays streamed eastward through the valleys and out across the foothills to the prairies. High over Yamniska, the ravens and ravens played in the pink warmth of the atmosphere at day's end. They chased each other happily, dodging left and right, climbing and diving, dancing through the sky. The birds called to one another, "Where have you been all the day?"
"Over by Mount Fable, eating ants."
"Up Fort Creek, grabbing minnows in the willow marsh." The fight, the storm, everything sorry and cold and negative was forgotten. How could a bird not feel glad in a sunset such as this? Colin's heart filled with joy. His bill opened, as if by itself. He called, "I found some human food at Raven's End." Without even trying, he had caught up to Zack and Molly. "You're a strong flyer," Molly said.
"Yes," Zack agreed. "You must be getting over that crash.
Hey, let's do some aerobatics. Molly,
I touched your tail feathers."
Zack nipped Molly's tail playfully with his bill. Then he tucked both wings and dived.
"Rock," he called. "Catch me if you can."
Molly folded one wing under, and the other wing snapped straight up as she half-rolled into pursuit. Catching Zack with ease, she pecked him lovingly at the base of his tail. Then they both went after Colin.
"You're it! Ha!"
Colin copied Molly's half-roll, but he was awkward. Molly and Zack swooped by him, simultaneously cupping their wings to send a ripple through the air. The ripple hit Colin, and he flipped upside down like a puppy bowled over by a bigger dog. He stumbled about, amazed at what Zack and Molly could do with the air itself. He watched as they locked feet.
"Here we go," croaked Zack.
Pulling in their wings, both birds plunged toward the ground, spinning around, shrieking with delight as the air roared past. Colin watched them falling and falling, becoming a single dot of black far below. Then the dot separated into two. Molly and Zack veered apart, feathers whistling loudly from their speed. As they leveled out, the pair glided this way and that, hunting for an updraft. They found one and rode it back up to Colin.
"Want to go for a tumble?" Molly asked him. "Do you remember about tumbling?"
No, I don't really remember." Something about this scared him, but he wasn't going to show it.
"I'd like to try, though."
"Just keep your wings tucked until I let go," she instructed. "I'll let go just a little way down, in case you don't remember how the tumble works."
"Okay, I guess."
He and Molly locked feet and tucked. Off they went.
"Hawk!"
yelled Colin as they picked up speed and the horizon spun around.
"Kra-ha!"
laughed Molly. She released him quickly. but Colin continued to fall. "Oh, my!" she cried. "Colin, stick your wings out!" His eyes had closed tightly. His mind had jumped back to what?
"Pull up! Pull up!"
he heard a voice saying, but he couldn't help himself. He was falling, falling so far, so fast, into the darkness below where death lay. Something seized him. He felt himself dragged to a stop, then carried gently sideways. He opened his eyes. There was the Maine Raven.
"My word," came the deep voice of the big bird. "You were certainly headed for a mishap, my friend."
He was carrying Colin in his claws, keeping them both airborne with great sweeps of his wings.
"Thank you, sir." "I've seen this before," the Maine Raven said to Molly as she and Zack flew near. "These young ravens, you can't tumble with them. Sometimes they just freeze up from fear."
"It's my fault," Molly apologized. "I didn't realize."
"He seems to be feeling better now," said the Maine Raven. He looked at his cargo. "Shall I release you then?"
"Yes, please," said Colin. The Maine Raven let go carefully, one foot at a time. Colin righted himself, coordinated his wing beats, and kept flying with the three other birds. He was still a little dizzy.
"Who is this bird, pray tell?" the Maine Raven asked Zack. "Is he the one you brought to the flap?"
That's right, M.R., said Zack. "He's new to Yamnuska."
"Indeed," said the Maine Raven. Perhaps he would like to introduce himself."
He looked squarely at Colin with the same eye-holding expression he had used at the flap. "My name is Colin."
"Colin? Just Colin?"
demanded the Maine Raven. Yes, sir. Just Colin." The Maine Raven gave him a withering look. His eyebrow feathers were rising, and he clacked his bill once. Turning away from Colin, he boomed out his growing anger.
"Isn't this a bad-mannered bird? Here I've just saved his life, and you think he didn't care a wing mite?"
Suddenly Zack was at Colin's side, whispering in his ear.
"Say, Corvus Corax, you idiot! Colin Corvus Corax! Quick! Colin Corvus Corax!"
Colin shouted, just as the Maine Raven was starting to lecture Molly about the company she kept. The Maine Raven turned back toward Colin.
Colin C.C., is it? How nice of you to favor me with your full name."
His eyebrow feathers still stood out.
"M.R., please don't be too hard on him," Zack interjected. "He's recovering from a pretty bad accident. Can't remember things."
The Maine Raven turned to look at Colin more closely. Zack kept explaining.
2 days ago, he got into some kind of scrape and crashed at the foot of the south face. Acts like he's had a head injury. He couldn't remember about the flap or anything, really. Didn't even know his own name, for the tree's sake. I'm sure he meant no harm."
"Zack and I are looking after him until he gets better," Molly joined in. The Maine Raven looked from Zack to Molly and back. He looked over at Colin.
"Well, let's hope he remembers the social graces soon," he said coldly, "or he won't last long in this flock."
With that, the Maine Raven dipped a wingtip, changed course, and flew off to join some other birds soaring nearby. They had been watching the incident.
"Whew," said Zack to Colin. "You really got his tufts up."
I'm so sorry. I didn't realize."
And now we're in trouble, too, Molly added. Wait till word gets round that we've befriended a boor.
He's no boor. He's just mixed up. Give him a few more days and he'll be fine.
And what makes you think that, Mr. Smarttail?
Molly was getting angry. I knew this wouldn't work out the minute you brought him home. You're always doing that. And it just makes trouble for me.
Zack blinked several times, trying to think of what to say. Cullen started to fly off in the other direction. Zack collected his thoughts. Then he spoke in a soft voice meant only for Molly's ears.
Molly, Molly, please be patient with him. I have a feeling that everything will be okay.
She turned her head away.
No, really, he insisted. Something tells me that, well, maybe the flock actually needs this bird, you know? Remember when Greta came along? Remember how messed up she was?
Molly's expression changed completely. She began to chase after Colin in the darkening sky.
Colin, Colin, come back. I'm sorry.
Colin was miserable, headed who knows where. He'd made a scene at the flight, and he'd embarrassed the two birds to whom he owed so much, right in front of the main raven. Now he'd just keep flying until he encountered another flock somewhere.
Chapter 9. Colin, wait!
It was Molly, and Zack was right behind her.
Come back, he called. Never mind the main raven. Everything will work out. We need you.
Colin had plainly heard only the words, "We need you," but that was enough. He turned around.
I know how hard this must be for you, Zack said as Colin drew near. It's hard for all of us. But listen, bird, I know something you don't know, and it would be better for everyone in the flock if you tried to stick with us until you get yourself sorted out.
Colin couldn't imagine why Zack would say that, but at this point he wasn't going to ask.
Okay, if that's what you really want, he said morosely. I'll try not to mess up like that again, I hope.
He felt very tired. What a day this had been, all ups and downs. With darkness at hand, he wanted only to sleep.
I have to go somewhere and roost, he said.
Sure, said Molly, soothingly. Well, you can roost with us tonight, if you like. The three birds flew purposefully toward home, toward Yamnuska, which filled the northern sky, huge and black, against the lavender of oncoming night. As they drew closer, Colin wondered how Molly and Zack were going to locate their ledge in the maze of shadows. Yet, without hesitation, the pair flew straight to the familiar roosting spot. They settled down next to each other. Backed up against the rock, invisible in the darkness, and high above the predators on the valley floor, they were as safe as any birds could be. Colin found a comfortable spot at the opposite end of the ledge. He fluffed his feathers out against the chilly evening breeze and noted that the rock was still warm from the day's sun. He felt himself relaxing. Well, at least he knew what this CC business was all about. Tomorrow would be better. Just before Zack and Molly fell asleep, they heard Colin say something. It was a question asked aloud, although not really directed toward anyone.
Who's Greta? He muttered.
Molly whispered to Zack, How does he know about Greta? He couldn't have heard you mention Greta's name, could he? And she wasn't at the flap today, or the flight.
Well, what did I tell you? Zack whispered back. This bird is something special.
A nighthawk cleared the cliff edge above them. It called Vince, Vince, as it slipped softly through a night sky full of moths. Far below, somewhere out in the Bow Valley, a coyote howled. The stars grew brighter. The birds slept. Chapter 10. Greta arrived a little late for the flap, but no one seemed to mind. She flew feebly and landed awkwardly. As Molly identified her to Colin, he noted how small she was and how old she looked. Greta's feathers had lost their sheen. Her bill was rough along the opening, worn from years of use, and it had a prominent scratch along one side. But her eyes, her lovely brown eyes, thought Colin, were so clear, so deep. Her eyes shone with intelligence and wisdom far beyond that of any other bird in the flock. The main raven called the flap to order, and Maya gave the news. This time there were no complaints, but the main raven lectured the flock about fighting.
Fighting, he said, is a highly detrimental activity. It wastes our energy. A caring, well-adjusted raven cooperates in matters of sustenance. When a raven's ender finds food, he or she is expected to inform the rest of the flock of its location. And never, ever is there to be any stealing. Granted, sometimes we make a game of chasing one another when we have food. Well, this is done in fun, and it is acceptable. But stealing a flock mate's breakfast is a different matter entirely. I appeal to all CCs here to practice these important principles.
He raised and lowered his head grandly as he talked, extending his impressive neck feathers when making important points, and occasionally unfurling one wing or the other. Now he glanced around the circle.
Of course, the birds for whom these directives are especially intended are not here to receive them this morning.
Indeed, Colin thought. Dolus and his friend were absent. Where were they?
Knowing that everyone was wondering the same thing, the main raven spoke before the question was actually asked. After yesterday's unfortunate incident, I discussed with Dolus and Garth the idea that perhaps they should be away for a while. I suggested that they return when they are feeling a little more agreeable.
The other birds nodded their heads. Colin looked over to Zack, who whispered to him.
Main ravens kicked them both out for a couple days. Standard thing after a fight. He'll lay into me next.
Sure enough, the main raven looked sharply at Zack.
And now, Zack, CC, have you anything to say to us about your role in this altercation?
Yes, I do, said Zack. I'm terribly sorry to have started it. Dolus did provoke me, but I shouldn't have taken the bait. I got what I deserved, too, he said, spreading his breast feathers with his bill to display a scabbed-over wound.
Before any of the other birds could interject something about how much Dolus deserved the attack, the main raven closed the matter.
Well, he said more brightly now, Zack, while you have the floor, how would you like to introduce your visitor?
Zack raised his bill high and flapped his wings once. He called.
Molly and I have made the acquaintance of a very interesting CC. He arrived somewhat unexpectedly by crashing into a juniper bush.
Ha! A couple of birds laughed. Zack was known for his wit at the flaps.
And he seems to have lost his memory in the process. But he wasn't hurt otherwise. He's a cheery bird, very good-natured, and we have offered to put him up until he remembers where he was going and moves on.
Zack poked Colin with his wing. Earlier he had explained to Colin what was going to happen, so Colin took the cue.
"Oh!"
"To all the CCs of the Raven's End flock," Colin called out loudly, raising his head high and showing his neck feathers. "My name is Colin Corvus Corax, and I bring you greetings from... Here his voice dropped, and he looked around, apparently bewildered. "Well, from wherever it was I came from." Zack had told him to say this in exactly this way, and it had the desired effect. Several birds laughed.
"Ha! What a funny bird!"
"Oh, Kraha, did you catch that? From wherever it was I came from? He can't remember. Kraha!" Then Colin threw in a kicker. "Of course, wherever I came from, I'm sure they don't miss me there." That did it. Every bird in the circle cracked up. Even the main raven, given only to quiet chuckling and always in socially correct circumstances, came out with a loud guffaw. He had to give credit to Zack, the main raven thought. That bird really knew how to make the best of an awkward situation. And this Colin had no pretensions. Well done. The main raven held his wings out, calling for order. When everyone had got over the joke, he spoke. "Welcome to Raven's End, Colin CC. We hope you enjoy your stay." A young bird couldn't help himself. Trying to suppress his laughter, a sort of high squeak came out, and then he said, giggling, "I wonder if he could remember, crack, 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 if he could remember anything about us when he leaves, crack, ha!" Again, the flock lost its decorum, craw-hawing away until the main raven raised his eyebrow tufts a little, quieting the birds. "That will be enough, Brendan," he admonished gently. Then he spoke to everyone. "I would be pleased if all Raven's Enders would personally extend their greetings to our visitor after the flap." After the flap. We shall now move on to the last item on the agenda. This was the daily report on food locations. It was given by Marg, a bustling, businesslike raven. She had been scratching with her feet, making little notes to herself in the dirt. "Hi, everybody," she said. Her voice, loud and brassy, was full of enthusiasm. "Today we've got a really great menu. The cougars finished with their sheep over in the North Cirque, and there's lots left. And Greta tells me that the dead elk in the lower valley is a day old now, so the cougar won't be on it much longer. She's a strong cat, though, and she's dragged it into the trees. We'll have to get there fast, in case she decides to bury it." Marg opened her bill and smiled widely around the circle. She loved giving these reports. "Now here's the topper, gang. Kathy's found raspberries under Frodo buttress." "Yes, and even with all the rain. Kathy, please tell us, dear, exactly where are they?"
Well, Kathy began in a tiny voice, the only surviving member of a family that had perished together when lightning hit their nest. Kathy seemed permanently frightened.
"Speak up a little, would you please?" asked the main raven.
Okay, sure. Well, they're not actually under Frodo Buttress. They're more like under the runes." She stopped.
Marg urged her on.
"And where under the runes, dear?" she asked brightly.
Kathy looked around the circle, her head low, her wings starting to flutter involuntarily.
Well, right there, I mean, right under the runes, sort of. Wait, what I mean is, they're in that gully, the one that comes out from the runes? Just right at the bottom of it, you know? That one. Oh, I just can't explain it. She shut her eyes.
"That's fine, Kathy."
The Maine Raven spoke in sympathetic tones. "I'm sure we'll be able to find them quite well from your excellent directions." He turned to Marg. "Was there anything else?"
"No, that's all for this morning," she said, finishing up with another big smile. "Have a nice day, everyone."
The Maine Raven smiled back.
"On that note, I think we'll adjourn."
He walked grandly away from the center of the circle, turning his head from side to side and ruffling his neck feathers. The others made room for him along the edge.
"May we have a motion?" he asked.
All the birds in the circle unfurled their wings. Cullen was unprepared for this, and he stepped back out of the way. The raven's enders held their wings outstretched and fluttering, as if they were about to fly. But no one took off. Viewed from above, as this display was meant to be viewed, the effect was striking. What had been a loose circle of ravens looked like a solid black ring as the wings of the birds overlapped one another. To the ravens, this was symbolic of unity in the flock. It was always the last thing they did before ending the flap. The Maine Raven waited for a moment to let the feeling build. Then he raised his wings straight up.
"Rock-a-taw!"
he called loudly. All the other birds did the same. This was the flock's special call. Every raven flock has one. Delivered with power and purpose, a flock call carries far on the wind, letting the world know that the flock is there, that it's strong, and about to begin the day's foraging. Ravens in flight give their flock calls to strangers as they pass on the wing. As a greeting, it's more meaningful than just "Ow!" Sometimes it's a warning. Each flock has its territory, and it doesn't like other flocks butting in. A vigorous "rock-a-taw" every morning at the east end of Yamniska told all and sundry that the place was occupied, just in case. Well, just in case. Cullen wasn't expecting any of this, and he didn't participate. By chance, this was the correct thing to do. After all, Cullen was not really one of the Raven's End Ravens. But he saw the significance of the motion, and he would have liked to have joined in. The motion ended the meeting. As the Maine Raven had asked, each bird hopped over to introduce himself or herself to Cullen.
"Hi, Cullen. I'm Marg, C.C. We're so glad you dropped in, so to speak.
Marg touched his bill lightly with hers and bounced away. The next bird was Brendan, the young raven who had laughed out of place during the meeting. He seemed very earnest now.
"My name is Brendan C.C., he said. "I'm kind of new in the flock, okay, because I just got, like, inducted this summer. I hope you have a pleasant visit with us, and I personally hope, especially, that you get your memory back soon."
Brendan was just reaching maturity, and this was the first time he had made a formal introduction. The Maine Raven smiled at Brendan as he finished, showing that he had done well. Another young bird came up to meet Cullen.
"Hi, Cullen," she giggled. "I'm Sarah C.C. Marg's my mum."
Cullen bowed politely at each introduction, pulling his head back and fluttering his wings a little in a submissive gesture. He was catching on quickly to the civilities here at Raven's End. One by one, he met all the birds in the circle. Even Zack and Molly reintroduced themselves, giving the formal welcome. Then each bird left for the day. Molly and Zack, the only mated pair in the flock, left together. One raven hung back from the rest, waiting until the others were gone. It was Greta, the old one. She walked over slowly, rather than hopping up like the other birds had, and she stood facing him silently.
Colin was about to speak, to end the awkwardness. But Greta spoke first.
"So this is Colin," she said. Her voice was low and scratchy. It gave away nothing of her mood. "Fell out of the sky, eh?"
"Yes, ma'am." There was another silence while she looked Colin over, first with one eye, then turning her head with the other. She walked right around him, at one point prodding his side gently with her bill. She did the same under his tail, which made Colin jump. And then she spoke again, evidently satisfied.
"Well, Colin, you seem healthy enough. But my name is Greta. Come to me when you've got a difficult question. And pay attention to your dreams."
Without waiting for a response, she stretched her aged wings and flew slowly away. Colin watched her go, his bill hanging open in amazement. How did she know about his dreams? But who was this Greta, anyway? Chapter 11.
"Come on, Colin. Let's eat."
Zack and Molly were headed for the cougar's kill. Colin joined them as they jumped off the rocks at Raven's End and coasted over the meadows to the north. Wild Gaillardia was blooming there, looking like hundreds of big yellow daisies on the grassy slopes. Soon they reached the center of the valley, where the forest sloped gently down to the edge of a stream. Here the trees were taller, and the woods less dense.
"There's the elk," Zack called.
He flared his wings, putting on the brakes, and descended to the edge of the creek in tight circles. Several other Raven's Enders were already there, clustered around a reddish lump lying beside the water.
"Looks like she dragged the thing right through the creek," Zack said to another raven. "Strong cat, eh?"
the bird replied. "I sure hope she's not hanging around like." He looked about warily. Colin landed beside him, trying to remember his name from the many introductions at the flap. Yes, this bird was called Scratch. Why was that? Then Scratch did what he was named for. Tucking his bill under his belly, he scratched himself with it.
"My bugs are terrible today," he complained.
"So go jump in the creek," Molly suggested.
"No way. You know how much I hate water, Molly."
"Yeah, so do your bugs," Molly said, as she hopped over to the carcass. What had once been an animal the size of a small horse now lay as a low mound of red meat, white sinew, and glistening bones. Loose hair surrounded the dead elk, so much of it that the meat seemed to be heaped on a brown carpet. The cougar had eaten well, leaving the rib cage empty of the parts she liked best, the heart, liver, and lungs. And she had also torn off a rear leg and carried it home to her kittens. This had left most of the animal free for scavenging until the cougar returned. A family of coyotes had arrived first. They had opened up the elk's head, chewing through the hide, cracking the skull with their sharp teeth, and eating the brains, which they enjoyed most. The eyes were soon gone, and the tongue after that. The coyotes were gone, too, for the moment. Having stripped the major muscles from the neck and sides, the coyotes had wandered away to a boulder up the slope and flopped down in the shade behind it, so full of meat they could barely move. All four were sound asleep. Still, as the ravens approached the carcass, they glanced around constantly, watching to see whether the coyotes were waking up. And the Raven's Enders were wary of the meat itself. Despite their hunger, they didn't simply start eating. They treated the dead elk quite differently from, say, a discarded sandwich. They walked up to the carcass nervously, taking small, jittery steps.
a bird would come close, dancing forward and backward, and then abruptly leap up, stumbling and flapping backward, as if the elk had suddenly twitched to life. Having shown such fear towards something obviously dead, the raven would approach it again, perhaps this time actually touching its meal, before doing another jumping jack, and then backing off. Eventually, though, one of the birds took the first bite. That was the signal. Everyone moved in for breakfast, and as they did, they discussed their ritual.
"Oh, nicely done, Marg, nicely done," complimented the Maine Raven. "An excellent lead, if I do say so myself."
"Thanks. I hope it wasn't too quick."
"No, no, just right. I particularly liked your wing work on that last jumping jack."
"Oh, it's nothing. Molly was better last week. I could have waited a little longer, I think."
"So could we all," chuckled the Maine Raven.
"But first things first."
"Precisely, Marg. First things first. As Greta always says, do things right, live till night."
A couple of birds walked boldly into the rib cage. There they could expect to find delicacies, a bit of the lungs, a little chunk of the spleen that the cougar and the coyotes had missed. But they wouldn't have much warning of approaching danger. Molly was too cautious to go into the rib cage. Perching atop it, she took hold of a strand of meat in her bill and ripped it free. She swallowed the morsel. "Not really ripe, but not bad," she pronounced. Colin saw a tasty-looking blob of red clinging to the lower jawbone, maybe a shred of the elk's cheek, and he grabbed it with his bill. He pulled, but the piece stayed attached to the carcass. Clamping onto it, he pulled again, harder. Still, he couldn't tear the meat off. This was stupid, he thought. Here he was, with all this food in his bill, and he couldn't get it loose to eat it. He tried once more, tugging with all his might, and his bill slipped off, sending him flapping over on his back. As he clawed the air, the other ravens danced with laughter.
"Cra-ha! Colin's trying to eat the whole elk at once! Cra-ha-ha! What a crazy bird!"
Colin fluttered back to his feet. This was making him angry. He stepped up to the carcass again and looked at it closely. The piece he wanted had torn partway through. He saw the point at which it was still attached, and he nibbled at it with the tip of his bill. A little blood ran out of the meat as he cut away at it, and he tilted his head back to let the red liquid run down his throat.
Glorious!
He worked furiously now, suddenly very hungry, and then the meat came away, a good-sized chunk, too much to swallow. Colin realized that the other birds were still watching him. He turned around to face them, carrying his reward sideways in his bill.
"Hey, wow," Scratch said. "Breakfast in one bite, eh?"
He looked admiringly at Colin's prize. Like the other birds, Scratch had been picking at tiny strips and flakes of meat, eating as he went, not having the patience or the presence of mind to think of sawing off a virtual steak, as Colin had.
"Use one smart bird," he said.
"Oh, much smarter than I am," said a small, scrawny raven, hopping up.
Colin noticed that one of its legs was missing. The bird, who hadn't been present at the flap, spoke to him again.
"With only one leg, I could never hope to accomplish what you just did, even if I had the brains to do it, which I don't. And I'm terribly hungry, terribly hungry."
Colin looked at the bird. Touched by this combination of compliment and appeal, Colin snipped off a strip of his meat and gave it to the bird, saying, Here you go. I don't mind sharing. At this, Scratch sniggered.
Good old Weedle strikes again.
You've been had, Molly whispered to Colin. Don't let him do that to you. Weedle will say anything just to get a bit of whatever you've got.
Colin flinched. That piece was too big for me anyway, he said, trying to hide his embarrassment. He held the remaining meat under his foot, tore it in two, and swallowed half. Anybody else want some? He said casually.
I do, said a voice from the trees.
Chapter 12. The birds jerked their heads toward the sound, hearts beating wildly as they leapt into the air. They hadn't been paying proper attention, and now they might suffer the consequences. One raven, Brendan, was inside the rib cage. In his panic, Brendan jumped up and almost knocked himself out against the breastbone. "Quack!" he cried, flapping about. But Zack saw where the voice was coming from. He settled back on the ground. "It's okay," he said. "It's only Perry." A smallish gray and black bird glided softly down on stubby wings. His eyes were large, dark, and friendly.
"Scared you, did I?" Perry asked, landing atop the carcass.
His short black bill probed eagerly between the ribs, extricating a choice tidbit that had been missed by the ravens. Marg turned to the other birds.
"You know, that could have been the coyotes," she scolded.
Perry swallowed his find. "No problem," he said cheerfully. "I was watching out for you."
"Well, thanks, then," Marg continued. "But that was still a lesson for all of us."
Deftly poking about, Perry snagged another bite. He looked up, cocked his head, and listened for a moment. He had better hearing than the ravens did.
"Actually," he said, swallowing the meat, "the coyotes are waking up. I'll just have one more helping. Not bad, this elk. And then I'll say toodaloo."
A moment later he was gone, vanishing into the woods as soundlessly as he had come.
"What kind of bird was that?" Colin asked Zack quietly, so the other ravens couldn't hear.
"Gray jay," Zack replied. "He's a relative of us ravens. Jays are, the second smartest birds in the mountains."
"Well, he seems smarter than any of us that time."
"Well, maybe Perry is as smart as a raven. Sometimes I think so. But jays are awfully dumb about humans."
"What do you mean?"
"They come right up to him. I've seen Perry there actually land on a human's hand."
"Oh, all the time," Molly added. "They're terribly cocky, those gray jays."
"Well, if you was as quick as they was, you'd be cocky too," said Scratch, picking at something under his wing. "Put it this way, like. Have you ever heard of one of them jays getting caught by a human?"
"No," said Molly. "I guess humans just can't kill them."
Greta joined the conversation.
"It's not that humans can't kill them," she added. "It's that they don't want to kill them. Gray jays are just too cute to kill."
She stopped to eat as the ravens laughed at her remark. "How could you not like gray jays? Friendly, honest, helpful, and, yes, cute in their soft gray and black plumage. And they had those big eyes and that cheery voice." Greta struggled with a strip of rib meat, then held it dangling from her bill.
"I'd love to stay and eat this, friends, but we had better go. The coyotes are just across the creek."
No one had seen Greta look over that way, but sure enough, the coyotes were slinking through the undergrowth, only their ears showing. The animals would soon be dangerously close. All the birds leapt at once, flapping into the trees surrounding the kill. Now safe, they watched the coyotes jump across the creek for another go at the meat. Two of them seized a front leg in their jaws and pulled at it, growling, until the skin tore away. Then both of them went for the exposed flesh. The other two also latched on, and soon all four animals were fighting over the leg, snapping and baring their fangs. The biggest one snarled nastily and nipped at the others, driving them back. Then he settled down to gorge himself. "Disgusting," Molly said, turning her bill away. "I don't know why they have to eat like that, and they don't care a bit for each other." In the days that followed, the other birds began to accept Colin. The flock thought him odd for asking stupid questions all the time, but at least he was friendly, and he went out of his way to be helpful. He spent much of his time exploring the valley, and one morning he came to the flap reporting a new carcass. It was a small find, a marmot, but it had died of natural causes, and nothing else had scavenged it. So the flock had first pick, enjoying delicacies that usually would have gone to a predator. Maybe, some of the birds thought, Colin would never remember where he came from. And that would be fine with them.